Oh, I just downloaded. God damn it. Good evening. Welcome to the Monday Night Big Footy Tiger Cast. I was just trying to download an MP4 intro video. I'm like, oh, it might take a little while, so I'll just hit live. And then as I've hit live, it said, oh, download complete. But anyway, I'll maybe just use that for next time. But welcome, everybody, from around the country and the world, from wherever you're listening to the Monday Night Show. We talk about all things Tigers. Hope you're all doing well. EJ, welcome back to the show, mate. Loving the background. La Law.
L.A. Law. L.A. Law. Lay Law. I heard a couple more on the weekend. You know, Lawla. We're just gonna keep punching it home until everybody has got it worked out.
I just keep hearing that L.A. Lawla, but I don't wanna get that going at the G or anything, but that's all I can hear to remind myself. Hey,
the Kinks are one of the greatest bands of all time. I like where you're going there.
Okay. Oh, maybe it's got some legs. CB, welcome.
I see you a dinosaur age.
How are you, CB?
Very good. Warmed up before the show with a Season 3, Episode 1 of Dark Winds, which has just landed on SBS. So very excited. Great show. Wonderful cast. Robert Redford directs it. So, it's always good to have a couple of shows return. But anyway, that's the good news. Let's get on to the bad.
Very nice. What hoodie have you got on there? I haven't seen that one before.
I've got these on now.
Oh, yeah. No, I like it. I just hadn't seen the gold Puma on the gear before. There we go.
Maybe it's Premiership gold.
Could be. I'll answer this one straight off the bat. Jamie Smill didn't play VFL because he had unfortunately re-hurt his hamstring on the very, very minor side. And it sounded like I think to the point where they couldn't actually even identify when it happened at training. That's how small it was. But they're just being a bit more cautious. No, I won't say what I got told. But anyway, yeah, we'll see him at some point during the year. And I think they're just going to go through a bit of a conditioning phase with him and get him up to speed. So he will be back out in the park before we know it.
You skated very close. You were very close to the wind there.
I know. I had to think my way through it, didn't I? Yes. And honestly, I don't know if people think that I do it on purpose or not. I truthfully don't. It's purely all accidental. But I think CB might be taking the hit for me today after what I heard pre-hitting live, which is good. But before we get
started... No, it's not good.
Oh, no, sorry. It's not. Well, it's good on a personal front that I might be able to shift the blame, but not from a Tiger standpoint. Before we get stuck into everything else, we obviously have to go through the North Melbourne Death Ride chart, which we had complete control over this week, and we didn't come through with the goods and give them another L. So they did rack up a win against us, which we're obviously going to talk about. But the good news is that West Coast somehow won, which means they're kind of at a net result of the same as what they were before we started that round. And was it Melbourne, I think, won as well? So they've increased their lead. I can't remember what Sydney did. But the end result is still 7 losses, still 17th, still pick number 2. And they've just closed the gap on us. And then, yeah, West Coast have obviously caught back up to them. And it's all just, yeah, roundabouts and merry-go-rounds and all that kind of stuff. So no real progress, but we didn't lose too much in that space as well. But would have been good to have gotten the 4 points. We'll jump straight into the game because there's an equal spread of good and bad stuff to talk about. North Melbourne defeated Richmond 12-6-78 to 11-8-74 by 4 points at the MCG, EJ. First quarter, look, I think the first quarter was almost the worst quarter we'd played for the year. Visually, it looked really, really bad. And North Melbourne hadn't really won a first quarter all year. So they were pretty up and about. And it was no secret that they came into the game probably in better form than we did, and that first quarter showed. But I think it's important to say that whatever Uze and the coaching staff said at quarter time, the message clearly got through and it was executed and acted upon straight away. So to turn it around instantaneously, I think shows really good buy-in to what the coaches are trying to do. Despite the first quarter being rubbish, the fact that they could respond, I thought was a good thing.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I think the second quarter was our highest pressure rating quarter for the year. But we said before the game that the mature North Melbourne midfield is where we saw the danger. That's how it played out. LDU, unbelievable. Even the young kid, McKerchin, had a great game. They ripped us to shreds. I said to someone before the game, the thing that I love about this side and the reason I know the buy-in's there is it had come on the back of that Essendon effort and Port Adelaide. I said, I'm really happy that we don't turn our toes up, even when it's not going well.
Yep.
That's when you talk about the buy-in. We get the turnaround. We probably should have won the game. Yeah, no, 100%. Well, look, I actually don't have that many negatives out of the game, strange as it may seem. I'm full positivity this week.
I was probably a bit more upset than most CB, and maybe unnecessarily. I just really wanted the 4 points in that game, and we were so close, and we only have ourselves to blame. As the adage saying is, bad kicking is bad football.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm with you guys. I'm definitely a glass half full on the game. And what's pleasing is every week we're seeing improvements and different improvements in different areas. So our tackling and our pressure this week was off the charts, you know. So the young fellas can certainly execute. It's just a question of that consistency. We haven't got the we haven't done a four quarter game all year. And that's what's really hurting us. And that's what they've got to learn to do, I guess. But yeah, look, I am firmly in the camp of North didn't win it, we lost it. Ironically, no, we're only ahead for 10 minutes of the game. When you look at the goals we missed and the opportunities we squandered throughout the game, it wasn't just down to the two kicks in the last quarter. We consistently blew some efforts during the game. But having said that, the work rate of the kids, nothing but positives from what I saw, to be honest. It's just we just didn't get the chockies. That was the only bit that was missing, was that last piece of the puzzle. But everything else, it was a pretty compelling game, actually.
I think it's a little bit disrespectful to North Melbourne to say that they didn't win it, we lost it. Where it counts, in the middle of the ground, they smashed us in contested ball. Like, we got obliterated. So, I mean, they played their part in getting themselves in the position to win the game. There's no doubt about that. Could we have taken chances? Yes. But it's not like they were falling over and we didn't win it. They were actually playing some decent football as well.
They were.
I think we dominated for longer periods of the game, to be honest. We just didn't put the score on.
Yeah, I think we did too. I thought after the quarter time, I felt like we were the better side for three quarters. It was a bit of a seesawing battle, but we just kind of missed some of those crucial shots. But that second quarter, I've seen a few people mention it, but the pressure rating of 275, which we sustained for a substantial period of that quarter, is quite remarkable. And equally as remarkable was the fact that North were almost matching it at 230. Like, it was just a hot, contested game. And it may have probably looked ugly to a neutral supporter, but that was just two teams cracking in as hard as they could, a million mile an hour. It was actually impressive from both teams to have that level of pressure across a quarter, to be honest.
Well, the commentary was it was a bit of an uglier game footy to watch, but when there's that much heat around the ball, it wasn't. It's pretty hard. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't easy. It was a hard physical game, and it wasn't easy to get a kick out there. Like, it was pretty tough, and it's a credit to both teams.
92 tackles apiece, EJ. When do you reckon the last time would be that two teams hit 92 tackles each? Like, that's
when crazy. Do you reckon the last time we hit 90 tackles?
Oh, decades. No, not maybe.
We had over 20 tackles in the first quarter. And pleasingly, we won the tackles inside forward 50 count by panels.
That was a scarily lopsided stat for us. And it probably didn't reflect the scoreboard, unfortunately. Like, I feel like we didn't capitalize on that part.
Definitely.
But we almost tripled our season average. It was a huge difference. And what was interesting is earlier in the week, a few of the training reports had made mention that there was some really full-on tackling-specific drills happening at the club where they were going pretty hard at each other. And there was a couple of players who got nailed a few times during the week. And I don't know, maybe it was one of those bring your mouth guards, lads, because there was a noticeable difference in the intensity and the tackling work rate, specifically from the second quarter onwards, than what we've seen in almost every other week this year.
I'm going to say this. he's one of my favorites. I love Mansell. I love the way he goes about it. I really do. Like he sets a very good example normally. He's a great leader at the club. But if Tom Brown was going to get a bake 2 weekends ago for potentially missing that that fist before he laid the game-saving tackle, I would hope that Adam Uzay pulled Mansell aside and certainly provided some strong advice about what his discipline cost us a couple of times during the game and why he probably needs to just change that aspect, I would say.
That was on the wing right in front of me. Right in front of me.
Right in front of me. Yeah.
That apparently for that late push or whatever. I have a real issue with these downfield free kicks getting paid because the contact that's coming is almost instantaneous. And
yeah.
I think the penalty far outweighs the offense anyway. It's not like it's 2 seconds later and they're getting flattened. It was a genuine attempt to, because you're allowed to push below the back, right? You're allowed to push in the backside. It was a genuine attempt to put someone off their balance. And I didn't think it was a downfield free kick. And if I could highlight one other decision, which absolutely sent me spare, later in the game, there was a holding the ball paid against us where the player did a 360 and then got the handball away, right? Players have been doing 720s all bloody year without it getting called as a free. Got away a perfectly legitimate handball. It was the hottest holding the ball in that position I've seen in ages, and the crowd around me really lost their rag.
I reckon, yeah, there's a lot of, even in our game, for the first three quarters, there's a lot of, like, two rotations, get the ball out, nothing paid. And then the last quarter, about halfway through, they started paying them, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
You've let it go all day. Don't start doing it.
It was so the other got pings, but... Yeah, there was definitely others that were far worse within that game that weren't paid. But on the Mansell one, look, I probably went a bit, I don't know, shot the trigger a bit early. I was pretty pissed off with what he did, to be honest, more so because it was the second infringement for the game. And I agree with you, EJ, that a lot of these ones, not just for our game, but in the AFL in totality, a lot of them are very much instantaneous, which I always thought was okay. And I think that's become a bit of a grey area where, you know, they can't pull out of that. When they're right there, they're entitled to try and tackle or smother or do something to the guy with the ball as he's about to kick it. And I think they need to maybe realign themselves. When I say they, I mean like the umpiring department, on what's deemed late, or actually give us an explanation on what's deemed late, or is it any contact? Because now it feels like any contact after a kick, no matter how late it is paid. And then, of course, the TV shows it on replay and 0.75 speed and it looks worse than what it is. But in reality, it's very instantaneous. I just would have liked him to have learned from the first one because I really felt that one when it gave Darling that goal killed our momentum a bit in the last quarter. We got it back though, and he's going to learn from it. He's young and like on one, like he's really trying to make a play and make something happen. So you don't want to begrudge him for that either. Like it's a real double-edged sword there. What about the hold? There was the Lynch potentially being held in the last little bit. There was the LDU handballing it over the boundary line when Taranto was right behind. There's a couple of iffy ones that happened, but ultimately we missed some shots at goal that we should have kicked.
But we actually had the shots. This is the thing. We actually had the shots at goal, and they were set shots. It wasn't if it was a burst out of the pack and a 50-50. We actually had the set shots. There's only, I think, McCorse might have been. No, McCorse was a set shot as well. So, nah, it's on us. It's on us. Yep. And yeah, they'll learn. I mean, the kids will learn. It's all good.
No,
yeah. And I think now that we've demonstrated that we have the ability to maintain pressure and to lay tackles, they can see that it keeps them in the game. So they can see if we go back to, you don't want to talk about the glory days, but if we go back to 2017 to 2020 and they used to celebrate defensive acts and the tackles and that because they knew that that rewarded the team, not just themselves. If we can, you know, if the kids are picking up that this is paying off, that the defensive actions are benefiting the team, and we go down that path again, we should see the application of defensive pressure on a more consistent basis.
You get that buy-in, don't you?
if we bring that heat next weekend, I know we're missing Boulder and Lynch, but if we can bring that intensity around the pill, I had us penciled in for a win for Lynch before Lynch had his head issues. Now unfortunately it's track back a 50-50 game, but if we bring that pressure, we'll crack Essendon. They won't like that. They won't handle that.
If you bring pressure, like I really don't know what the metrics are they used to measure this number, but if you bring a 220 pressure most weeks, you'll be in the game more often than you won't be, just by the nature of how that is it sustainable? That's probably the other question. But yeah, that'll be very interesting. In terms of some individual performances, I think it's only right that we lead with Nankervis. That battle against Sherry was one for the ages. I really don't know who got the chocolates at the end of the day, but Nank had that look in his eye. He was locked in for this. He knew that he had to have a big game to give us any chance of getting close to winning this. And he was just a physical beast. I think he had like, was it 10 or 11 tackles or something? Sherry and he had an enormous battle. And whilst we did get smoked in the clearances in the middle of the ground and around stoppage, competing around the ground and trying to halve contest, I thought Nank was huge.
13 tackles.
13 tackles. My gosh.
But at one stage, in the top three tacklers for the game, I think Nankervis was either Zeri was one, Nankervis three, or vice versa. But how often do you see in top three tacklers for the whole game and two of them were ruckman, which was pretty insane?
It's a crazy... I saw the same thing you did, CB. I'm like, holy shit, they are going hell for leather. Okay, so Jerry did get some coaches' votes. And look, he was good. Undoubtedly, he was good.
What were the coaches' votes, by the way?
So all we know is that they gave Jerry 9 votes. I'm not sure what else there was in the way of votes. But the one thing I'll say, which maybe is what swayed it into his favour, is a lot of his taps did result in good clearances for North Melbourne, whereas we didn't quite have that. So he was actually more damaging on that front, which is a combination of him and their midfield getting on top. But I'm still super proud of Nank.
I think Jerry won the battle, but it wasn't a knockout. It was points, and it was a fantastic battle to watch.
Yeah,
it was a title fight that went into the last round, and both boxers were standing at the end of it, so it was good.
Speaking of some other individual efforts, Sam Banks, lads, I thought backed up his last week game with another really, really good game this week. 25 disposals, 4 marks, 2 tackles, and I think a game high 614 meters gained.
Yep.
He's found himself. I know it's only 2 weeks, so it's not a big sample size, but you would have to say that he's playing this role really well. And what I really liked seeing was him wrapping around players who were taking marks to receive the handball to keep it moving quickly, which is what you want your halfbacks to be doing. I think he's taken a liking to this role, and I think the role's taken a liking to him.
Yeah, Was it Banks had a disposal efficiency at 33%?
No, Banks went at 68%.
Damn, Jaden Short Jag gag ready to go, but done. You go, Ege.
Look, I thought Banks had another really solid game. He's developing beautifully. The one thing I will say is, compared to a lot of those around him, he's giving us good drive offensively. He now needs to add a little bit of steel on the defensive side of the game. Those numbers weren't strong. Only 8 pressure acts, 2 tackles, and 2 intercepts, and no clearances, only 3 ground ball gets, 3 contested. So the defensive side was a bit soft. He's giving us amazing drive and tick, 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 and I'm certainly not slagging him, but that's the next step in his development, is to be accountable whilst doing what he's doing.
Just on that draft, so you had Banks, Brown, Gibkiss, and Campbell was a rookie that year. They were all in the same year?
Banks, Sonzi, Brown, Gibkiss, and there's one more.
And Campbell?
Was
Campbell a rookie? If so... Yeah, if so, I know we're talking about this year's haul and how good that was, but in the way these guys are developing, 2021 could be a pretty handy little, or 2022, whatever it was, could be a pretty handy little haul for us.
There you go. It was Juddy Clark was the other one. RFC.
There you go, yeah, and he's shown some good form as well. So there you go.
Yeah.
Jack Ross, another. I thought he had a really good bounce back game from his game from the previous week. He actually stood out quite a lot for me in a positive way. You do the stats, EJ. I know that's your shtick. You go the stats for Jack Ross.
Oh, I've got a shtick. I thought he's been poor for a couple of weeks, and he at the ground he really did stand out. Defensively, he was fantastic. 21 possessions, 76% efficiency, 309 metres gained, but he had 7 contested possessions, 6 ground ball gets, 11 tackles and 29 pressure acts. So what I was talking about with Banks, he really brought that to that side of the game. And I know we know the coaches are rating the defensive efforts, and that's why some players that who are not shooting the lights out with disposals are keeping their spot. I thought he was on the cusp of being in danger, but that was a really, really solid game. Yes, he did crunch people on the far wing. He absolutely hammered him.
And I guess I'll raise a point after we discuss the next couple of footballers. I will just raise a point about that gaggle of footballers and reactionary supporters. Again, Thompson Dow, another one. Thompson and Hugo were put in the same basket, I reckon. They both had very, very, very solid games. And again, Dow, 17 disposals, 82%, 7 tackles, 8 contested, 27 pressure acts. That's why he's in. And he was excellent. He's had a good month, I reckon, Thompson Dow. He's been right in amongst it, very consistent. So, and I'm happy for the lad because he was copping a lot of shit for a while. Well,
and he still is copping shit, and I cannot understand why. And I don't want to go on too much of a rant, but people are still honestly expecting him to put up, I don't know, Dusty or Koch-like numbers week in, week out, and if he doesn't, it's a failure. I truly think that people don't understand his role within the side. His role's not to have the sexy 45-degree angle kicks. His role's not to be a goal-kicking midfielder. His role is to extract the ball from the contested shitstorm situations and feed it out to the guys who can kick it and can use it. And he's ticking all those boxes on a weekly basis. He's starting to get more confident. He's weaving in and out of traffic to find the best option. He put his body on the line a bit more, taking some contested marks on the goal line, even drifting back and helping out defensively. I know he's not going to be the long-term solution, and no one's saying that he is, but for the now, he's not doing anything wrong. He's not put a foot wrong. He's ticking the boxes offensively and defensively, and I just truly think people don't have the correct understanding of what his role is. Not every midfielder can be an A-grader. You need your foot soldiers to do their thing as well. It's just the way it is. You can't have 5 A-pluses running around in there. It just doesn't happen.
Steve Carell, thank you. GIF, like in any makeup of a side, right? You have a few A graders, a bunch of solid B graders, then you've got a bunch of C graders or B minus C graders that you just hope they do their role every week. If you look at a good list build versus a bad list build, right? Carlton have got the top couple of players are fantastic, but they've got a big bunch of real whack-a-ways down the bottom. If we've got Dow, Ross, etc., filling out this middle core that will never be A-graders but will do their job most weeks, that consistency and that, or not consistency, that reliability that, you know, at least they're not going to make dumb mistakes and they're going to give you effort. If we can get those players at that standard, that's what you need. You can't have 6, 7, 8. You can't have 10 A graders in a team. If you do, your list is skewed, and at no time does that get more exposed than at finals.
Yeah, and I've seen people knocking his disposal. He went at 82%. He turned it over 3 times. Like, by contrast, Taranto and Hopper, and I'm not knocking Taranto and Hopper, but just if you want to compare, they're in the 60% efficiency. So I just think he is a whipping boy unfairly, and people just want to go after him as an outlet without actually considering his role and what he's actually doing and respecting the fact that he's improved. I'd almost go as far to say he will come close to winning a most improved player award of some type at our club. Yep. I think he's been given a chance and he's actually developing and thriving in being a third or fourth tier midfielder, which is what he's designed to do.
Come on, talk about your next one, Ege. Come on, let's go.
Well, next one.
Put on the loose strides, get out the hand lotion and the tissue box. Come on, let's talk about it.
I didn't give him votes. Why don't you talk about him?
Well, he's your boy. I don't want to take your boy.
He is my boy. He is my boy. And I think on the weekend we saw why I get excited about him. You can see what he's going to become.
We haven't even said his name yet.
What did he have? 22 disposals, 64% efficiency, which is up there with Hopper and Toronto.
Kane McAuliffe, we're talking about, just in case.
Yeah,
Kane McAuliffe.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. I thought it was tattooed on my head. 18 pressure acts, 6 tackles, 9 contested possessions, 9 ground ball gets, 324 metres gain, 5 score involvements, 6 inside 50s. He just didn't nail the goal. But it was such a step up from last week's game. And it was a step up from the fact that his involvement was even across the four quarters, whereas last week he went hard early and then fell in a bit of a hole. So maybe the adjustment to pace yourself a bit better, I don't know. But, yeah, he was really solid and really physical.
You know what he's like? He's our new version of Stuart Maxfield. Similar style of game.
He's a ball of muscle, isn't he, Kane McAuliffe?
He hits him, but keep in mind too, he's actually pushing forward and getting scoring opportunities. He just hasn't. He had 2 shots against the Eagles. He had 2 shots this week. I think he just isn't finishing off that work, but he's getting in such good areas.
I think he's kicked 3 or 4 behinds, plus maybe 1 or 2 out in the full from shots at goal. He's 100% getting in the right spots. His minutes on ground increased quite a bit from last week as well, which was good to see too. I don't know. You just see him playing and I didn't feel like he was out of place. Like, I think we've all known he can play, but he just sort of did his thing, slotted into the role. There was only one knock on him and that was the missed pass to Mantle inside 50. He was by himself, which would have set up a shot at goal. But you know Everyone's making kicking mistakes, so shit happens. He'll learn from it. But I think that game in the weekend, EJ, just, I think, confirmed that we have to keep playing him. You can see he's got the tools. You can see he's got the work rate. He's got the aggression. It's tick, tick, tick. And I think we've just got to keep getting the games into him.
And you can see he's got physicality. He's going to hurt opponents. Like, he cracks in.
Yeah.
So hits hard. So quick schoolyard vote. If you're playing him in the middle, are you going Camden McIntosh or Kane McAuliffe?
In the middle?
McAuliffe.
In the guts. Yeah. In the guts, McAuliffe.
K-Mac to the wing. McAuliffe in. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. So stoked for this kid. And, yeah, he cannot be out of this team because and this is my point that I'll go back to now that we've discussed McAuliffe, Dow, Ross, Banks, these guys. We have such reactionary supporters that week in, week out, this guy's got to go, this guy's got to go. But no. They've got it good, bad, or indifferent. We have to keep playing these guys. It's the only way that McAuliffe's of the world, the Dow's, it's the only way they're going to learn and develop. If you just drop... I mean, one of the irony is the criticism a lot of supporters have had with Hardwick or whatever. We put a bloke in for a game or two, then we drop him. All of a sudden, we're giving blokes a run of games and we're going, oh, well, no, drop him. What do you want? So, to me, keep him in, give him the time, and the only way we'll grow and develop is if we bed these guys down and they are all showing improvement. That's the thing. Not one of these guys is going backwards. They are all showing improvement. So, everyone just needs to have a Bex, a good lie down, and it's not a week-to-week thing. This is a commitment of a month thing. This is bigger than that. It's the bigger picture that people just need to think about.
And that always looking for the grass is greener, oh, get this person in. And then when they come in and something else goes wrong, I'll get this person in. I think this year the coaches have shown that they are planning the development of these players pretty well. There's a bit of unplanned, like Sims coming in, Armstrong getting injured,
Oh, he's done it. He's done it. Oh, shit. He's dropped the eyelid.
Great. Thanks, mate.
Yeah. At least I didn't maybe put it on the thumbnail of a video that I uploaded.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yes. So I just have to add myself into the come on man at the moment. So I think the coaches this year have done a pretty good job. Yes, we all want to see Aljo. We all want to see this and that. But they've pretty much, I think, got time into a few different people and everyone's going to get their chop through the year, except maybe Samson Lyon.
Yeah. And I think that's all very fair and reasonable. Now, Seth Campbell, before we speak about Seth Campbell, thank you to everybody for reminding me that he will probably win the most improved player and not Dow, which is a fair enough call. But I think I made my point that he's still improved nonetheless. But Seth Campbell, Jesus, what a game. 3 goals, 2 behinds, 15 disposals. He is a dangerous, dangerous player when he gets going. There's nothing much more to say about him. I just hope that we are able to secure his signature for a little while longer before the whole Tassie thing kicks into play. But CB, what did you make of Seth Campbell's game?
Interesting. My son, and he's not a real, he's on social media, but he's not a real big on the Tigers top side of things. He reckons he saw somewhere where Seth Campbell and Banks are both saying when Tassie comes in, they're sticking with the Tigers. So come from him, he must have seen it somewhere. So we'll take that for those who are asking about the Tassie thing coming in. Seth Campbell, superstar. I mean, the only thing I'll say is when you run into goal and you're not even at a 45-degree angle, you don't need to do the impossible every kick. A drop punt is still quite acceptable to go through the big stick.
He butchered that kick something fierce. That was bad.
You hit the belly of the ball, and I was like, oh. So anyway, I mean, that's a negative out of a very, very strong positive game. Again, his work up the ground is fantastic. He's quick. He is causing some problems. Again, if he's not in your AA squad of 40 players, I'll dead set spew up.
Yeah, he's got everything. He just needs to, and I want to be careful when I say this, I'm not saying to curb the flair, but there's a time for Learizing and there's a time for just using proper technique, and you just don't want it to have a negative impact. Here we go. I like you. Good on you, Nick. Good words.
A few people are backing that up too. Which is good.
Yeah, he just needs to just calm it just a little bit, but he's probably the most exciting 2-3 year player that we have.
Like for a long
time. Of the non rookies, he's probably the most exciting.
Speaking of youngsters, I think before we push on to the VFL, Sam Lawler, your man in the background, I think I won't shit on Finno Sullivan, but he did put a good case forward as to why he was picked at number one, I think, on the weekend. Just the mark, that mark in the goal square, I know many of players have taken marks in the goal square, but a 5-1 for a kid in his 5th or 6th game, whatever it is, 9th game, to jump that early, to still keep his body in the right shape to take that grab with other key defenders around him, it just shows a lot of class and poise. And the amount of times there's the hand that picks up the ball, weaves through traffic, looks for the handball, gives the right option, he's going to be a good player. And like we've said constantly, EJ, this is the worst version of Sam Lawler we're going to see.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the saying, everything before the butt is irrelevant? Yeah. I'm not going to shit on Finno Sullivan, but...
Well, I didn't... I thought I was pretty diplomatic about it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, he didn't have a preseason or had a half a preseason, then got injured with his jaw, and he's banging this year. The years previous to that, he was playing cricket. This is the absolute rawest version of Lawler that you're going to get. Yep, the mark was unreal or whatever, but on the wing in front of where I was sitting, there's just little things. Like, he got the ball, he never panics, he doesn't just make a bad decision. He actually went through holding it like he was going to handball it. He went through three defenders, weaving, and then out the other side, just gave the softest bang on handball or whatever. The only criticism I would have of his game was there was an opportunity to get a ball into the forward 50 quickly late in the game.
Oh, I'm so glad I wasn't the only one who thought this. Carry on.
Yeah, sorry. And he hesitated, and it's the first time I've seen him hesitate, and he went backwards and inside to Bolter, maybe?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was screaming at the TV. I'm like, we've got 4 1-on-1s ahead of us. Yeah. And we're chasing the score to win. Get it in there and give them a chance because the defenders might do something they don't want to do and give away a free kick. Switching it to Bolter wasted about 35 seconds for the ball to end up in the same spot. And I would have loved to have seen that put in a little bit quicker.
Apparently I said the word again. I'm getting slayed here.
You did.
I'm just going to say two things. Sam Law, did he play? Didn't notice him, really. Didn't think he did too much. And secondly, the I word, dead set. Our show is becoming an episode of Monty Python in the life of Brian.
Yeah,
and he keeps saying Jehovah. And everybody,
I was thinking the same thing when I saw he did it again. I thought the exact same skit.
We were turning into a Monty Python skit. But Sam Lawler is just I'll give Kane Corns credit on this one. He just said, he goes, how lucky are Richmond supporters? He said, we've just had 15 years of Dusty and now this kid pops up. So, touch wood, everything's going very well currently. So, long may it continue.
Agree.
I don't even know when I said it.
I bet when you're talking about how he got through, how he's going in pre-season, how he had the draw issue.
But that's past tense. That's past tense. We're talking about when it could happen to someone. That's past tense.
I was taking the piss, mate. I was taking the piss on Sam, just so you know.
I'll push on to the VFL quickly because we're already at 37 minutes. We haven't even done Come On Man yet. VFL was actually an interesting game. None of us could watch it because it was on the same time as AFL number one, which was really piss poor planning, but... we ended up going down by 2 points, but we were well behind for most of the game and we had a bit of a flurry in the last quarter. We actually had the ball, for those who maybe didn't see it, but in the last 2 minutes, we had the ball in our half forward line about to go inside 50 and the siren went. We obviously missed out on one more final chance, but Morris Jr. didn't do a hell of a lot for three quarters, but went into the midfield and lit it up and everything he touched turned to gold. Juddy Clark snapped a goal with a couple of minutes to go to get us to within a couple of points. He also had 20 disposals. 5 marks, 2 tackles. That's a good response from Juddy Clark. He's working his way into it nicely, and I think he will be in a position to demand selection if he keeps putting out numbers like that. McKelty Lafau got a goal on his first game back, which is unbelievable. It'll snap around the body. He played about a half, which is to be expected. And then Tyler Sonzi just does what Tyler Sonzi does and gets 37 touches in the midfield, 3 marks, 7 tackles, 9 clearances, 1 goal. And yet, we won't see this happen at AFL level.
It's an interesting one. To my personal opinion, and I have no background information on this, so this is just my personal opinion. Looking at the re-signings of players that we've been announcing recently, I'll say it now, I reckon Tyler's papers have been stamped. That's what I think personally.
Yeah, I probably tend to agree.
I think they've seen enough to know what they want for next year. That's what what I think.
Yeah, and yes. I don't think it's anything to do with his skills or ability. I think if you look at what some other players have brought physically, I think that's defensively, I think is the word. I think that is the reason why, if it is the case, that the papers have been stamped.
We're getting Monty Python references in the comments. That's fantastic.
Yes, it is fantastic.
It's so good. Now, Greg, this was the question I was just mulling over in my own mind. Are we essentially talking about, is it McAuliffe versus Sonzi to get those midfield minutes?
I think it's more than that. I think it's more than... McAuliffe it's Trezise. It's you know, and you got these other kids. You still got Hotton to come through, Smil to have a crack. There are so many people about to leapfrog this kid in the queue. Just yeah.
And Trezise had another good game as well. Thank you for pointing that out, RFC. Yeah. So it's disappointing to lose both of those games, but good to see players like McKelty coming back in and doing well, and he's going to obviously get more minutes next week. Tyler Young won't be too far away as well from joining back in. Apparently, Dion Presti is not far away from playing some sort of footy. I think Uze was on Fox Footy tonight. I'm not sure if they asked him about Dion, but apparently post-game, I think it was RFC Centre tagged me on Twitter, apparently that Dion is close to playing some sort of football the next week or two. So that strengthens the sides even more, which is good to see. But, yeah, we'll have to see what transpires there.
Dead set, and I love Meatball. I love Dion. If we bring him into the senior team because we've put the minutes in or blah, 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 on a track, again, at the expense of a McAuliffe or whoever, even a Trezise, or I know Trezise played the weekend, but he'll probably be back into ones very shortly. I'll go apeshit. He's so got to go.
Uze said VFL.
Mate, not just a game of VFL. He needs to play a month to prove that he can get through a month of football without blowing something.
I have a conspiracy theory. And Kylie has just touched on it. On my theory, when is the mid-season draft?
It's next Wednesday.
Yeah,
it's next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Oh well, there goes my theory.
Next Wednesday. So there it is. So on that.
There goes my theory.
And where's this post earlier? Someone mentioned that we had said that we thought he was gone. We did for all into everything that everyone was hearing from Trevor. All the noise was that it was on the cards. So something as I don't know what's happening, but I think the crux of it all is everyone needs to now brace yourselves that we won't be having a mid-season draft pick. We won't be getting Razzo. We won't be getting McCarthy. We won't have a spot available.
Watching all these players just go.
Yeah. So I know people are already shitty about the players we've missed out on, and I can understand that too. But just now, mentally prepare yourselves that it's going to happen again this year. Because, we are not going to have the picks to be able to do it.
We've got some pretty smart listeners.
I thought this too, but that means he can't play at all for the rest of the year. And he's scheduled to come back by like round 17. So I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah, because
there's another player that hasn't played VFL yet. It is a young player that will be on the long-term future. And you could put him on the list.
Who?
Gibbo.
No, but he's got a return date. There's no way they would do that.
He's got a return date.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a fitness update that I obviously didn't pay attention to.
Yeah, no, he's got a return date. He'll be back playing some sort of footy by round 17 as well. 17, 18. Okay. So I actually think he might be able to squeeze in an AFL game, form permitting, somewhere between rounds 21 and 24.
Well, Vertex has just said it then. Vertex has said it. Marte Kalina to the injury list. Let's go.
Oh, please. Please. Everyone
on our fitness report list has a return date, so I cannot see any of them being put on the inactive list. It just won't happen, I don't think. that'll be, we'll have to brace ourselves for that one. But that's the VFL. No, Gibkiss has been training for a lot longer than last week, Rocky. He's been doing a lot of drills for a lot longer. He's just ramping up the training to be a bit more non-contact based, but he's been doing a power of work for a long time. So it's almost like a mini preseason for him now, essentially, is where he's at. All right. Well, I think that part's done. It's time. Oh, hang on. I've left myself.
Come on, man.
Yeah. I've not got the audio grab ready. Here we go. It's time for.
Come on, man. All right. Well, there's no update to the list.
Do you want me to bring the list up so everyone can have a look at what it still is at?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
All right. So this is the current list with no change to it.
Rightio. I'm going to smack myself and yourself, Michaels. Like, we really, really need to have an intervention or something because we just can't help ourselves. I've dropped it a couple of times tonight unwittingly and not even knowing when I've done it. But you you, all of you, all that one of you, you've put it on the thumbnail to a bloody video upload.
Defended yourself before saying it was after the fact. So was mine.
I was grasping at straws.
Oh, okay. Can I have some of those straws, please?
We just need to be better. Come on.
Come on, man.
Now, the next one was brought up by Grok, and it's very valid. I don't think it was deliberately disrespectful, but if you're going to be on a national audience doing a ceremony, you probably need to get what you've written down checked and crossed off by somebody else, because I'm not sure how the Selwood family would have thought being mentioned in the by Auntie Joy in the Welcome to Country and naming the wrong son.
That was
actually really hard to listen to.
Not good enough.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't good enough.
I'm not going to click the audio just out of respect for the Selwood family. Like, it's, I don't want to make light of that situation. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. But devastating for them. Just devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, how the whole family's feeling. But that's just salt that doesn't need to be rubbed into that wound.
Yeah.
But the last one, David Kosh and Port Adelaide. How do you keep yourselves in the media for 3 weeks on the same bloody event? So Koshy comes out on 5AA and says after the fact that what the Western Bulldogs players said was culturally insensitive. And A, if it was, we would have heard about it, because complaints would have been made and it would have been a big shitstorm. But how good Bevo coming out and saying, I can tell you categorically that nothing was said. This is in the pre-game presser just before the weekend. So they've managed to take it for 3 weeks. He came out, defended his players, defended his club. Kosh and Port Adelaide, it's time to put the microphone, the phone, the computer, just put it down and just give us all a break.
Come on, man.
Can I shoehorn just a couple of quick ones in on AFL news, which counted? I've got to say, Caroline Wilson of late, she's been absolutely on fire, and she's been on fire again tonight. So the question's now getting raised again. Could James Hird be back to coach the Bombers? He still has ambition. So the guy who led the league into the biggest ever drug scandal could still end up, as you can imagine, the Coterie groups, he'd still have his little tentacles in there. So, Caroline, my belief is that James Hird still harbours an ambition to coach Essendon. Nothing could be better than those guys white-handing himself. So that's a good one, Cara. Thanks for that one.
The second is one... Is that this year's Dusty to Gold Coast or what?
I don't know. It could get some serious legs, though. We could help this. If Richmond get up on Friday, we could really help this. Secondly, the AFL's had a meeting tonight with the AFL coaches. So obviously they're in damage control. They met up at a pub in Fitzroy and they get to have a bit of a forum, shall we say. So I hope the first item on the agenda is sack Laura Kane, but I doubt I'll be that lucky. But it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall with that meeting and how, because obviously the two Scott brothers have been very outspoken with the AFL. So that could be quite a heated little argument. And the third one, while the AFL's on a roll, the AFL and Tanya Hosh are negotiating an incredibly highly sensitive departure. Shots are being fired everywhere and it's going to get ugly. Now, I can't remember what was her role. She just come out and I think she's like a DEI or somewhere in that space in the AFL, and she feels she's being underutilized and basically undercut a bit. So they've got some serious spot fires going on at the moment at the AFL and zero leadership taking control. So I'll step out of it now. There's a bit going on.
Right. No, there definitely is. They're falling apart right in front of our eyes.
Yep.
All right, well, we'll push on to the preview of the big Dreamtime game, Richmond versus Essendon. Always a marquee fixture on the footy calendar and has been for quite some time now. And it's always a privilege to be a part of this game. It's got a bit of spice to it now, though. And annoyingly, Essendon coming off an absolute shithouse performance against the Bulldogs, in my mind, I think they're going to be fired up for a response, which is very untimely for us, given that we've lost Lynch and Bolter are going to be out. So we'll talk about the changes first, gentlemen. Like I just mentioned, at a minimum, Lynch Bolter gone with Lynch with the delayed concussion. So he obviously played out the game against the Kangaroos, but there were some symptoms post-game and he's now in the protocol, which is now, was it 12 or 14 days, whatever it might be. And we're on a five-day turnaround. So he will miss the Essendon game. Bolter will be in bed with a hot cup of Milo. So he will miss the game as well. And then I suppose it's just now, who do we bring in? My initial thoughts were to go with Campbell Gray to play the defensive post. And I would also bring in Jacob Blight to play up forward because I don't see us doing enough offensively just rolling with Jonty Fall and Sims and players like that. We need someone with a bit more maturity and physicality, and Blight's ability to run and jump at the ball and just go for anything in the air, I think is going to be vital to actually trying to kick a score this week.
And those two can switch forward and back too.
Yes, that's right. They can swap if we want to mix things up a little bit. Exactly right.
Also, I'd suggest, Green might be due for a spell. So there's an opportunity there. And I'm going to put it out there. Maybe Trainer's getting a bit sore. Maybe Trainer out and Jaden Short in if his knee's okay. And I know I might get shot for that, but I could see that happening. And maybe Albert too.
Yeah. My main concern about this game is the five-day break. Last time we came off a five-day break, we played really flat. So I wouldn't be against an extra couple of changes as discussed, purely going off the evidence of what happened last time. I do like the idea of – I saw RFC have Fawcett in there. I didn't see the VFL on the weekend because I was actually at the game. Has he been knocking the door down or – But I do think we need to bring in two tools, as discussed.
Fawcett had 14 disposals, two marks, one tackle, 12 hit-outs, one behind. So I guess a little bit of it as well, EJ, would be what the weather brings and what the matchups look like. If you were having to pick, let's say Campbell Gray's a lock to play defence, if you would have to pick someone else to play forward and you were picking between Blight and Fawcett, who would you go with?
I haven't watched the VFL, so I would also maybe, if you're looking at mature bodies, and I know I'm going to get absolutely shitstormed on this, but I'm asking the question because I don't know of their form and availability at the moment. Is Cozzy playing at the moment?
Yes.
Was he any good or was he hopeless or was he – because he is a mature body and it might be a one-week assignment.
He had 11 disposals. Again, like the numbers say one thing, but the impact we, none of us, I guess, visually saw.
I don't mind Blight.
Yeah, I just think, like, from the limited exposure we saw of him up forward, similar to Nate,
Jehovah.
He's just a competitive.
Jehovah,
like,
you said it again.
What? Who, me or EJ?
I don't know. One is.
Oh. Blight for me, I think, is just a bit more of a competitive beast. And like I've seen a few people put LeFau. You'd love to play him, but you can't do it. Like he's only played a half a footy. He's going to need another 2 or 3 weeks to get his fitness up. And I don't mind the call on Green for Elgar too. I'm probably being biased because I'm massively in the Elgar camp. But again, Green didn't produce big numbers. And yeah, I just don't know where to go with him.
Nick has raised the spectre here. Is there the possibility that MRJ comes in and we're banking on him lifting for the occasion?
Good point. Yeah, Green out, MRJ in. Absolutely.
You know, for the occasion.
Yeah. I'm really torn on that. Like he played one good quarter and it was a good quarter from what I see in here. If you're looking at body of work, if you were picking between MRJ and Elgar from a body of work perspective, who would you pick?
Oh, alga. Or alga. I don't know how to say it. Is it alga like algebra or is it alga?
I'm actually not too sure. I don't know.
It's alga.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, could MJ come in as sub? There's another possibility.
Campbell Gray stats. So Campbell Gray had 14 disposals, kicked a goal, 8 kicks, 3 marks, 6 handballs, 3 tackles. I reckon he'll come in. And I'll play him forward. Gray.
Yep. I think Campbell Gray is as close to a lock as you can be to be selected this week.
Yep.
See, and RFC's just said, not just for the occasion, he almost won us the game. That's fair, but didn't he also have just 3 possessions in the first 3 quarters?
Yeah.
MRJ.
Yes.
MRJ.
That is correct.
And our one criticism of him is not the skills or anything like that. It's the 4-quarter effort. And we're at the stage where we've had a good, consistent amount of pressure for a game. We can't afford someone not to be present, if that
makes sense. Trezise has to come in too, mate. 23 disposals, 11 kicks, 6 marks, 12 handballs, and something else. I can't quite tell anything, but or whatever. Where was he? He's had 6 tackles, 12 handballs, 6 marks, 11 kicks. So Trezise has to come in as well.
And it's to your point earlier.
Change them all.
I know. It's wholesale changes. Swing the axe.
AFL in. AFL out.
And it's not even in a negative sense. I think a lot of it's going to come down to the 5-day break. And I think that game we just played was going to be completely taxing on a lot of players. That's as brutal of a contest that we would have played for quite some time. And on a 5-day turnaround, there still might be a few sore boys. And I think there could be some other changes that may happen. But If we look from a matchup perspective, looking at Essendon, so forward line for them. So they've got big Peter, big 2-meter Peter. They've got Nick Martin's playing forward. He's kind of a medium size. Caddy, I wouldn't say Caddy is tall. So I think we can kind of cover that. Setterfield, Langford's a reasonably sized unit. But if we're rolling with just like a Miller, Vlosten, Broad, and a Campbell Gray, do we think that's sufficient enough coverage for their forwards?
No.
Or it's Blight, Blight, Miller, and Broad to cover the three talls and Broad.
Miller's 2-meter Peter.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I think we've got to pay a bit of respect to Timu Ray Romano because teams just don't, they seem to leave him alone. That's Nick Martin for those playing at home. He just seems to rack it up and no one seems to be held accountable to him.
It's a bit of a position shift for him as well, like typically off the half back and wing. So he's probably still getting used to it as well, but he can be quite dangerous. But you don't want to go in too tall, I guess, do you? And if you look at their back line, Ben McKay, obviously their mainstay defender, Zach Reed, and then they've got the runners with Andy McGrath, Mason Redman. So, again, I think a big key for us in this game is to make sure we can be ultra-competitive with our key forwards. Like, we can't let them sag off, intercept mark. Like, we've got to be competitive. And I kind of felt that Sims and Fall, not through any fault of their own, but I thought they were maybe half a pace off it on the weekend, and Fall especially didn't have the same impact in the air that he did the week before, but did do some really good things at ground level and helped get a really nice goal for Seth Campbell. But that's why I think it's important we do put in someone who can crash packs to give us a chance to bring it to ground. Is it going to rain at all? Do we know what the weather's meant to be like for Friday?
Keep playing and I'll have a look.
So what are the factors?
There's a long story short, folks. There could be, I guess if it made five, if we're a bit sore and tired, there could be like 4 or 5 changes.
Yeah, all, which...
All plausibles.
And like, if you were
Friday night, showers and 18.
Okay, so do you go in with one less tall? Like, it's such a juggling act, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you get more speed into the team? So maybe there is room for, like, if you bring in Trezise, MRJ, you bring in one or Blight. But I still feel like Gray has to come in as well. Like, it could legitimately be 5 or 6 changes in a team that put up a very valiant effort, only went down by 4 points.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
What other facets of the game, gentlemen, do we need to do well at to knock off the Bombers? Because I know losing Bolter and Lynch is a big hurt factor, but it's still a game that I think we're a genuine chance, and I think we'll go into it thinking that we can jag it. And I think similar to last week, the pressure in this game is completely and utterly on Essendon. It's again another free hit for us, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be feeling the pressure from all the external noise this week.
It's pressure. If we bring on Friday night what we bought on Sunday, we'll win. That's it.
I won't promote gambling, but I made a lot of money on Saturday night. The Bombers, they're very predictable. When you bring the heat, they just don't handle it. I even put on Twitter that I think the Bombers are going to get a reality check, and that's dogs by 4 goals plus. And the guy goes, "Oh, more than that, downhill skiers." And I said, "Plus, right? If we can maintain heat for 4 quarters, they will really struggle."
See, if it's going to be wet and dewy, do you keep Sims in, give Fall a rest, and bring in a medium-sized forward? And so you might bring in
Noah Cumberland.
Yes, bring in, say it is Campbell Gray to play forward. So you go with Sims and Campbell Gray forward, or you know, we can have Blight and swing Campbell Gray the other way. Have those two there, and then bring in that extra runner, hybrid forward type. Do you make the call, go for speed? Speed kills.
I think so. I think it's definitely a consideration if it's going to be Dewey and we can have the ball in the deck a little bit more. As someone put, we can't let Reed intercept Mark or Mackay for that matter. So whether we're scrubber kicking it inside 50 or whatever we have to do, we just can't give them the time of day to cut it off. And I think we also need a good first quarter as well, gents. That we need a bit of redemption from last week. Not many times can you give up 5-6 goals in a quarter and still find yourself in a game. We created our own luck by having all that pressure in the second quarter, but you don't want to have to rely on having to put out a 275 pressure quarter every week to get yourself back into a game. So I think very, very important that we convert chances early, to Grok's call earlier. It's just making the most of those chances.
Yep.
If we can control Durham, I think we can win the centre of the ground. If we do that and we bring the heat, we're a big chance.
Well, there's the other thing too. Nankervis, he's not coming up against Sam Draper this week. So he gets a chance to really monster another young ruckman.
Well, so Goldstein's rucking for him at the moment, but I've seen a lot of Essendon people suggest bringing in a young kid for his first game whose name escapes me. But I'm not sure if Goldstein's been out of form or if they're just wanting to see change or what the sort of story is there. But
he's just struggling to run out games.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. So, Nank might be able to get an advantage at somewhere along the line. What about Zach Merritt? Do we send the tag to Merritt? He's a prolific ball winner, and he's actually one of the players who's damaging as well.
We don't tag. They won't tag him. There's no point talking about it. We won't tag him. He'll rack up his 25 plus. And then we'll talk about the next Monday going, why didn't we tag him? So, yeah.
Well, any other thoughts on the game before we get tips and margin?
Nope.
All right. Well, who's going to win this one and by how much? Send through your thoughts in chat as well. EJ, what's the final margin going to look like for this one?
If we are okay off the 5-day break, and if we win, if we bring the heat, Tigers by 17.
Oof. I like it. CB?
We actually have a bit of belief about us at the moment, so Tigers by 15.
Oh, Joan Rayson gone Tigers by 7 goals. The Lynch and Bolter thing hurts. I think we're going to struggle to replace them to the full extent. The weather could help us, and I think our belief in our system, and if we can bring that same pressure and heat, I tend to think that, we might get over the line by, let's say, 14 points, but... Yeah, it does. It all comes down to the pressure we can bring on Friday night. If it's not on, then I don't care who you play, you're going to get done. But if we bring it, all the pressure is on Essendon to perform, because again, like North Melbourne, we should be a team they should be able to take care of. And if they don't, it's going to cause a lot of angst amongst the ranks over there.
Yep.
Oh, Sentimental Tigers by 86. Jesus. Don't mind that. But other than that, obviously we have another big VFL game this week. And yeah, we'll see big McKelty Lefau get some more minutes. Juddy Clark get some more minutes. And before you know it, gents, we're going to have a bit more of a selection headache issue right before our very eyes, which will be a very good thing to have. So,
and Nick Barakas raises the one point. Lynch missing, yep. We're less predictable. Yep. Sam Lawler to fall forward, watch him kick six.
Actually, on Sam Lawler, just quickly, I don't remember if we mentioned this or not. One thing that stood out to me for his game, he actually spent 115 minutes on the ground out of 133.
Yeah.
That's a long period of time. And I know he wasn't in the centre bounces a lot. I think he had 4 centre bounce attendances. But it just shows that we're leaving him on the ground for longer, playing up forward, because he's such a dangerous player that he makes things happen when he's near it. So a good way to get his minutes up and to get his fitness up and all the rest of it. Yeah, thanks everybody for tuning in tonight. Appreciate the love and support as always. Make sure you get around us on all the socials and everything like that. And yeah, we'll be back on next Monday, hopefully with a win under our belt. As for Friday night, there is a possibility of a live show. I'm not sure who will be on the live show, but if anyone wants to join us, feel free. But yeah, we'll see what we can do, because it's being in an away game. I won't be able to get to it. Yeah, we'll try and do something on that front. But EJ, CB, thanks for joining me tonight, gents. Appreciate your time as always. And until next Monday, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.